We have a special guest as we stop down for this. Brought to you by
Window Nation and All Pro Foundation Repair.
And here he is, Dave.
Thank you. And yes, let us welcome in the voice of golf for Westwood One.
Well,
Ted Emmerich.
Teddy boy.
Dave, thank you.
Hi, Ted.
Bob, Corby. Thank you for inviting me. I love E! News. I love the hard line.
Have you been a part of E! News in some time?
It has been quite some time,
okay.
I would say.
All right. Well, welcome.
Very glad to be here.
We'll get to the Teddy bits here in about 20 minutes or so of how he made us all laugh multiple times.
Did you bring any peach ice cream sandwiches?
Yeah, they melted on the way. I told Corby I was going to pack some pimento cheese and unwrap it just for him here a few days later.
Oh, the opportunities.
I wanted it stuffed in the bottom of his backpack, unwrapped for like 5 days.
That's a sweet, fresh Masters lid you're wearing, by the way.
Oh, it is. Where'd you get
don't
that?
Don't you like my get-up? That's right, Bob. You would know it very well. Masters hat and Pearl Jam shirt. I left my khaki pants and plaid button down and Patagonia vest in the
you
car.
Could not be, you could not
you
be
want.
Whiter if you tried there, Ted.
Yeah.
I approve that.
All right, speaking of Pearl Jam, not directly, but they have notoriously feuded with Live Nation and Ticketmaster over the years.
Indeed.
So this is breaking news from the Wall Street Journal, and it's now been picked up by several other outlets, that the U.S. Department of Justice is planning to sue Live Nation, the parent company of Ticketmaster, over an alleged monopoly over ticket event sales. And so they are the largest ticket seller in the U.S., and they have exclusive partnerships with major venues, big artists like Taylor Swift, all of the major sports leagues. And so the Justice Department is reportedly preparing to file suit on antitrust grounds.
So what would that do in the end? I mean, it is a monopoly.
Well, it's like, you know, when they broke up AT&T back in the 80s, they made them sell off parts of the business. Because you have this silo where they own the venues, they own the ticketing company, and they own the promotions company. They own all of it.
God.
And so it's just one hand shakes the other. Money just exchange hands, you know, within this whole corporate structure, and no one else gets a piece of it.
Didn't we have a number that it was like in the $60 billion range?
Yeah,
what they
does not make $50 billion.
Their gross profits, yeah, were in like the billions.
Yeah,
an incredible amount of money. So yeah, the exact details of the lawsuit were not disclosed, but sources told the Wall Street Journal that the case would be filed in the coming weeks. So we may have some movement on that.
$22 billion
last year, 2023.
And it's like, man, we've all lost hope that it could ever even change. We would not know what to do. This will be like robot strike zone if it ever gets changed to that. But seriously, we won't know what to do with ourselves if they don't run the entire racket. We just accept it because
right.
You still want to go to concerts.
We're just used to it now.
Yeah.
Can we just take away the $50 in fees? That
no.
50? I mean, you wish it was only 50.
Per ticket.
Right.
Yeah.
Per. I looked at some over the weekend. $428 for the festival ticket. $172 as a fee tacked on.
Man. What does that even mean?
We're just going to round it up
seriously.
To 600.
What does that mean? What is the fee?
Just to use their website, just the exclusivity.
Processing fee.
God.
Awful.
This is like
scandalous.
Like we've talked about with the NBA for so long. There's got to be a bubble, even if it is a monopoly.
Right. Like he does it, I know. Here's some points. I do it.
Good point, Corby. Well
Thank
done.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, this is exciting for Beatles fans.
Fans.
As the documentary Let It Be is finally going to see the light of day again. A restored version of the original 1970 movie is coming to Disney Plus on May 8th. This
now,
is
going to be on TV.
This is director Michael Lindsay Hogg's original film. And it has been restored by Peter Jackson's Park Road post-production team using the same technology they used to make The Beatles Get Back.
did it look bad or something? Like, I'm trying to remember Let It Be, the movie. I guess I don't remember it.
Well, but okay, so it's not officially been in circulation since the early 80s. There are some bootleg copies out there, but they are, like, many generations down, dubbed from early VHS or Laserdisc copies. It's never been on Blu-ray. It's never been on DVD. It's never streamed anywhere. No one's really seen it since the early 80s. And the reason why, Lindsay Hogg said that when he was finished with the movie, originally it was supposed to be in theaters in October, November of 69. And it didn't come out until April of 1970. And 1 month before it came out is when the Beatles broke up. And so when people went to see it in the theaters, the Beatles were already gone, and he said that it very much darkened the perception of the film, that it was like a wake. They were going to see these heroes and their infighting, and this last record that, you know, hasn't even come out yet, and it just, it had a bad taste for all those years. But now Jackson, Peter Jackson said, "I was so lucky to have access to the outtakes for Get Back, and I always thought Let It Be is needed to complete the story." So he said the two projects support and enhance each other. Let It Be is the climax of Get Back, and Get Back is the missing context of Let It Be.
Like, what kind of money do you think Peter Jackson dumped into this to make it not passable, but to his standards? Is that another, let's say the movie back then cost $10 million. Maybe it was less than that because it was in-house stuff, and
I mean, they're doing frame by frame restoration, and they're enhancing all the audio. I mean, no telling how much money they're spending. And Lindsay Hogg said that he did consult on it, and he told the only thing that he told Jackson was it needs to look a little bit more filmic. That he said Get Back looked very digital and very clean, and he wanted the movie version, you know, the re-release of the movie, to have a little bit of texture, even though it was much warmer and prettier than the original copy, that he wanted it to feel of the time still.
I'm impressed that he's still alive.
Yeah.
Now, will this include the scene of them masturbating in the dark, like we've heard about in interviews?
Right.
They call out the name and beat the Beatles.
Yes. That was in this process?
I mean, they must have had a camera on it somewhere.
I feel like that was part of their lore in the early 60s.
Oh, okay.
I don't think this was when they were grown men with children.
Oh.
Like they didn't put a piece of toast in the middle and...
Okay. Okay. And then they giggle.
Okay, we have one more bit of news fallout from Coachella weekend one. We had a bunch of random notes yesterday.
Bingo.
And so the one band that was on the bill this year that an old person like me would be interested in seeing was Blur. The British pop stars of the 90s alongside Oasis. And so they played the main stage on Saturday right before Tyler, the Creator.
How'd it go?
And so the crowd...
Everyone roared to life.
The crowd had no idea who they were.
Oh, no.
And were not vibing with their music at all. They were pretty lifeless, as you could witness from the live stream.
Have you seen the clip?
No.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and so...
Major L.
And then so they did one of their big songs, Girls and Boys, and Damon Albarn, the lead singer, he was trying to get the audience to sing along in the chorus, and no one would. And so he said at one point, "You'll never see us again, so you might as well effing sing this."
Okay, I don't want to put them in the same boat as Blur just because they're British and they came out around the same time, or as Oasis, because Oasis was infinitely bigger than Blur.
Sure.
Light years ahead of Blur.
They were neck and neck in the UK, but in the United States, Oasis dwarfed Blur.
Yeah, no one knew who Blur was around here. But if Oasis got back together, if the brothers reunited, it would be a sing-along to every song.
I don't know, but not from a Tyler, the Creator audience.
Well, maybe not, yeah.
So here's a little bit of funny audio. So this is... Their biggest hit in the States is Song 2. Very much a jock jam, a goal song. And so this is This is Damon Albarn talking about a meme, which I will play after he talks about it, that is going around on TikTok.
This song has been, I mean, my goodness, this next song has been so good to us. But I did get shown a TikTok of it being kind of performed by a vacuum cleaner. which is, you know, it is humbling and inspiring at the same time.
So this is what he's talking about. This is the viral TikTok where it's a guy in an acoustic guitar and then somebody playing the vacuum cleaner.
All right.
Pretty good.
The acoustic vacuum cleaner.
That's awesome. That was like, what was the name of the band, Ham, that was incorporate the chainsaw as a guitar?
Jackal.
Yes.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Speaking of Coachella and Tyler, the Creator, we mentioned yesterday that Donald Glover as Childish Gambino appeared during the Tyler, the Creator set. So he was on a live stream yesterday, late Sunday, kind of made news yesterday, that he has confirmed that there will be two more Childish Gambino records before he's done with his alter ego. The first is going to be a finished version of the 2020 album 3-15-20, which will be re-released under the title Atavista. So the
Atavista, you said?
Yeah, Atavista.
That guy works too much.
Yeah. So he released 3-15-20 during COVID because he wasn't sure when he would ever be able to release it. And so he just released it unmixed and unmastered. And so he's gone back and finished it. And then he says, as a follow up, he'll release Bando Stone and the New World, a brand new project that will be the soundtrack of a film. So he's going to do a movie as Childish Gambino and release the soundtrack. So
again,
he's too busy.
He makes me uncomfortable that he not only works as hard as he does, but he's good at everything.
Everything.
Yes.
He's a titan.
He is.
And handsome.
He is handsome.
A couple quick hits. Courtney Love, she has made headlines because she did an interview with the Evening Standard, and she's kind of torched on a couple of current heavyweights in the music business.
Uh-oh.
Speaking about Taylor Swift, she said, Taylor is not important.
Oh, dear.
She might be a safe space for girls, and she's probably the Madonna of now, but she's not interesting as an artist.
Okay.
Ooh.
She can say that. I can't disagree.
And then she also had comment about Beyonce, saying, I like the idea of Beyonce doing a country record because it's about black women going into spaces where previously only white women have been allowed. Not that I like it much. As a concept, I love it. I just don't like her music.
Okay.
All right.
She's bitter.
Can't you just stop at the, I'm glad she did this and she's entering a space that no one else has?
Right. But then she has to have that little dig in there. Man. And this is exciting news for Ham. I know you're more of a Batman guy, but Henry Cavill, former Cavill. Superman.
Cavill.
Is it Cavill?
Cavill.
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 Cavill?
Okay. Henry
Cavill. 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 Choose your own pronunciation. So he has a new movie coming out called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly.
Davey, you okay?
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Yes.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. And at the premiere, he confirmed that he and his super sperm have knocked up his girlfriend, Natalie Viscuso. They are expecting their first child together.
About that, Ham, a super baby.
Surprisingly, he didn't blow the top of her skull off of her head.
Henry Cavill girlfriend. All right, I want you guys to guess if she's ugly or not.
Is she hot?
Yeah.
Yes.
It seems he's doing okay. Shocker. All right, Dave, that is great e-news.
Good e-news, dude.
Let us laugh. Let us get ready to laugh as Teddy Emmerich once again brought us great joy from the Masters.
The ticket.
I'm surprised that this has not been referenced yet, because as Gordon has been known for years and years, whether it's doing the rant or whether when he was on the old Hardline or whatever, he was known as the poster boy of underachievement. I was shocked that this somehow hadn't made it into a Masters report, but alas, it has now.
Among those at 2-under, Will Zalatoris, after he had to withdraw from the Masters on Thursday a year ago. He bogeys the last two, so a 2-under 70 for Zalatoris. Patrick Cantlay, considered the poster boy of underachievement at major, shooting a 1-under 71. Tiger Woods even par through seven holes.
It's perfect because that is much more subtle than having unfun.
Yeah, that can work for sure. Well, there's a few more, but alas, we've run out of time, Teddy. We have run out of time.
That's okay.
Yes. You'll be back for the PGA Championship in a month.
You got it.
Okay. And we'll do this again.
That's awesome.
We'll have more fun and unfun after that.
Only fun with you guys.
Thank you, brother.
It's great to have you in our corner. You make the majors even more majors.
You do, man. It's so great.
It's great to be with you guys.
There he goes. The great Ted Emmerich. He's that much better than everyone.
But wait, there's more. Not only did the three-time Picks with Friends winner Corby Davidson correctly identify huge underdog Scottie Scheffler as this week's Masters winner, he also picked his closest competitor.
I'll tell you what, I will step my foot on the gas of Scottie Scheffler for sure, but my second pick is Ludvig Åberg, or whatever you pronounce his name.
I don't hate it.
And he's never played a major.
You are bearing witness to greatness incarnate. Hair immaculate. Winner of three of the last four Picks with Friends. And the ultimate pleaser of women and men alike. The ticket at Hardline's own, Corby Davidson. Bow before greatness. Bow, David, bow.
Dave Raymond, the TV voice of the world champion Rangers, gives great game hot sports opinions to the Musers tomorrow morning at 8:55.
So stupid.
On Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket.
Thank you, Ham.
Incredible.
Thank you.
well done. Could have made some money.
I know.
Could have made some.
Why couldn't we have been in Vegas whenever this was going on? We would have cleaned up.
All right. Well, it's 5:20, and in here is the ticket's own Ted Emmerich, a man who has meant much to us over the years with his sporting greatness.
When did you start listening to the radio station? Do you remember how old you were?
Oh, man. I go back to the two-minute drill. I go back to, early days. I can't tell you an exact year, but
was it
funny.
Your dad?
My dad, obviously worked at KRLD.
Yeah.
But he would have the ticket on in the car.
Yeah.
So we're driving around, and it was always hilarious when you guys would reference him and New Orleans cuisine and something he might have said at a Mavs game or a story about Rush in Montreal.
It is so funny. I know I've told you this before, but like the first three trips that I took for Cowboy road trips back when I was reporting and traveling and doing Mavs and Stars games and Cowboy games, but road trips with the Cowboys, I always initially sat next to your dad. And we both love music.
Yep.
And the minute you mention music, he would light up.
Let me tell you something, Podna.
And then there would be a million stories, and it was so great.
He was always ready to talk music with anyone.
Yeah.
And just the fact that young Ted has carried on the family tradition.
I know. Okay,
before us.
You grew up around the industry. Was there ever a doubt, though, that you were going to somehow be in the industry?
I mean, it's not like he, was Marinovich's dad and forcing it on me and training me to become some super radio TV guy or anything. I got bitten by the bug in middle school and
AIDS.
Not that one, Dave, but thank you for playing.
I decided that
I really wanted to do this, and especially play by play, and I'm really lucky. And On the way, I get to have some fun with you guys.
Yeah, so Ted's been doing the Westwood One Masters updates for how many years now?
This was number 10, number 9 in person.
Okay. And it is something that a lot of people, I feel, when they hear them on the radio station, they think, okay, the ticket has hired him to do this. If you're a P1,
sure,
you kind of know what's going on. But
and if there's one thing we do, we invest in sending talent all over the world for big sporting events.
Right. Now, this is Westwood One, and this is going out. The same reports are going out to untold thousands of radio stations for these updates. And you...
Hundreds, well, but sure. Yeah,
I like thousands.
Yeah, it sounds better.
We'll sneak in the, or you'll sneak in these little ticket references, and everybody is just waiting with bated breath to figure out what, where you're headed. So do you have a sheet with potential things, or did your memory...
Tell us
just,
your methods.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a note on my phone that I continuously update. You know, you get fresh material between the British Open last July and the Masters the next April. I have wondered at times, is the bit tired? It's been, I think, 3 years now that I've been doing it.
Yeah.
For each major?
For each major that I get to cover. I don't slip it in every single hour.
Right.
And it's funny because 1P1 did tweet at me, what, you're not doing the bits during updates anymore? After 1 hour went by without a reference.
They can be hard to please.
So I've heard.
That's why many players go off social media around majors. You may consider the same thing.
No, you're right. Yeah, the Zero Dark 30 LeBron.
That's right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yes. But you like this. The most common question is, do... my bosses know.
Yeah.
So I've never heard one word about it until this year.
Really?
Until last week.
Until the Masters. Mm-hmm.
So Friday, Bruce Gilbert is there. And we know Bruce's history here at the station. I believe he still works out of this building. He is an SVP with Cumulus.
Yeah.
And overseeing the sports division. I see Bruce once a year. It's at the Masters. Great to catch up with him. I never knew him when he was running the ticket.
Right.
I'd never worked here. He's always been good to me. And we're catching up. And at the end, he says, hey, by the way, I love that you sneak in the bits for the ticket.
So you didn't get in trouble.
So that frightened me for a second. Yes, Dave, but I did not get in trouble. He liked it.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
I don't think he's going to say a word.
No. He's on our side.
So we'll start with one that is a now famous Bob moment, which happened during E! News, I do believe, and we were talking about the television show Wednesday. Is that right? Wednesday.
I believe, yes.
And so we'll play Teddy's version of Bob's drop.
Bryson DeChambeau managing it. He's even today through 16, tied for the lead at 7 under par with Scottie Scheffler. Scheffler, the world number one, with a birdie at 10 to pull back into a tie for the lead. He dealt with bogeys at 5 and 7, his first bogeys of the week, but you just got to plow through that. He's birdied two of the last three as he heads to Amen Corner.
I kind of feel like I need to plow through that. Wonderfully fits. I really enjoy Ted's work here, and I also enjoy the cadence of a Ted report because you can sort of set your clock. Like we all have internal clocks on how long commercials are because we're in this. We know how long a ticker takes and that sort of thing just because your brain sets a timer. I feel like I know roughly the spot in the report where he will place one of these. And so I have a spidey sense in that regard, I think.
You don't lead off the report with it.
No, we're
you
gonna
don't just come out firing
right about
a waffle stomp.
Right about 70% of the way through is where Ted likes to place these.
You just gotta plow through that.
So one of the things that I believe that we have, maybe this was a rant thing, I can't even remember. Oh, yeah, no, it was part of the Great White Fire. Because
yes.
back in the day.
Okay, this was ridiculous to hear.
This, I don't know why. I was so nervous about this one more than any other one I have ever done because it is so stupid.
It is. It is.
And I still went for it. So you're welcome.
I made the mistake of, during the rant back then, whenever there was a fire that killed 100 people at a Great White concert back in the late 90s, early 2000s, I said something to the effect of, like, they were all in there having fun.
They were alive and having fun.
And now they're all unalive and having unfun.
Profound.
At least that's what I was accused of saying by Gordon and Davey. And so, Teddy.
Oh, and it's going to catch the right bank and not get his fortune as he did yesterday and go down on into the tributary at Ray's Creek.
Johnson Wagner, the call on SiriusXM. The quickest way to go from having fun to having unfun in Amen Corner is finding Ray's Creek.
Now, is that when a colleague?
Oh, my producer. We get done with the report. Producer gives me the side eye and is like, unfun. Huh. You know, just work with me here.
Yeah.
Is that in the AP style book?
Unfun.
It's so funny to contrast this, to give you a picture of where I am. It's, first of all, I'm not in a tower. I'm not big time at all. I'm not in the fishbowl at 18, obviously. I'm very lucky to be on the grounds. I'm across the street. They have the broadcast compound across the street now, across Washington Road. And so in the same building, across the hall, you've got BBC Radio.
Yeah.
Right? Another marvelous shot by Scheffler. And meanwhile, I'm overseeing. He's having unfun right now.
So we got a new one just last week when we had the April Fool's Open. Because we learned that one of the participants, EA, we kind of got on him because last year when he played, he was wearing these shoes that not only didn't fit, but it looked like...
They had no ankle support.
Yeah.
His feet and ankles were rolling out.
Yes.
And it was a walking dislocation.
Yes, it was. Yes. It was so weird to look at him. So he told us, though, before the tournament that that was not going to be a problem this year, that he had switched to steel-toed shoes.
Yeah, that he used to work or used to wear when he worked at the warehouse for Amazon.
Yeah, for golf. Like, that was his golf shoe now.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And somehow, Ted found a way to work that in.
Tiger Woods has played only 24 holes of competitive golf this year as he manages his surgically repaired ankle and knee and back. A lesser man would need a steel-toed boot to protect that ankle.
Boy, a lesser man would, Ted.
And again, somebody in Pocatello, Idaho, is asking themselves, steel-toed boot on a golf course? What is he talking about?
This guy paints vivid word pictures that are just, they come to life.
So Bob was part of the Masters scene this year. He went for the first time. And on Tuesday...
Did not make the cut.
You did not. On Tuesday, I believe you guys were together at this point.
We were.
Yes. Okay.
So you're over there on the number one tee waiting on our friend Will Zalatoris, who was
number
playing
one.
His practice round.
That's correct.
That afternoon. So you made it over there. Will walks up, and Will sees you, Bob, and walks right over and gives you a nice bro hug.
A very nice hug.
Yeah. His eyes locked on Bob's immediately.
He was in his backswing. He stopped and then went over and hugged him.
I was right next to Bob, and I was so stunned, I didn't even reach for the camera that was hanging around my neck to capture this moment. It's my biggest regret ever, honestly.
It
I
was all happening
to have gotten
very
that
fast.
For you. It was. Well, and I mean, it was more than a bro hug. Like, he dug his nails into your back a little bit. It's actually kind of hot.
Yes, yes. Actually climbed up. It was like a koala.
Bob's sweating.
It was wonderful.
Fanning himself.
I was probably knocked off balance a little bit. Like, what just happened?
Well, Ted did make the mistake of...
Oh, I do declare.
You're in Georgia. You developed this thick southern accent.
I need some sweet tea.
That's a rush of blood to the head. Oh, my goodness.
My Willie. You made the mistake of not taking a picture of it, but you did make it into one of your reports.
Zalatoris has been a runner-up at three different majors in his career, including here in 2021. Just got to be careful anytime a patron gives him a hug. The back is holding up so far. Zalatoris tied for second.
Yeah, I'm a patron. That's awesome.
I'm surprised that this has not been referenced yet, because as Gordon has been known for years and years, whether it's doing the rant or whether when he was on the old Hardline or whatever, he was known as the poster boy of underachievement. I was shocked that this somehow hadn't made it into a Masters report, but alas, it has now.
Among those at 2-under, Will Zalatoris, after he had to withdraw from the Masters on Thursday a year ago. He bogeys the last two, so a 2-under 70 for Zalatoris. Patrick Cantlay, considered the poster boy of underachievement at majors, shooting a 1-under 71. Tiger Woods, holy, even par through seven holes.
It's perfect because that is much more subtle than having unfun.
Yeah, that can work for sure. Well, there's a few more, but alas, we've run out of time, Teddy. We have run out of time.
That's okay.
Yes. You'll be back for the PGA Championship in a month.
You got it.
Okay. And we'll do this again.
That's awesome.
We'll have more fun and unfun after that.
Only fun with you guys.
Thank you, brother.
Great to have you in our corner.
You make the majors
anytime.
Even more majors.
You do, man. It's so great.
It's great to be with you guys.
There he goes. The great Ted Emmerich.